Welcome to a new episode of the India Independent Films Podcast. This is Rahul Desai. I'm a film critic for Film Companion. I have with me, as usual, Uday Bhatia, film critic for Mint. We are here this week to talk about Amazon Prime film that released last week. Right down our alley, I'd like to say, and I've been waiting for this film for a while. I'm sure case is similar. It's Ben Affleck's new film, Air. Starring his best friend Matt Damon, and it's more or less about the very famous Air Jordan Nike deal that was cracked back in 1984 between Michael Jordan's family and Nike, when Nike was at the verge of shutting down their basketball division. It's streaming on Amazon Prime right now, and it's Uday, given that I already said a few lines about it, say a few lines about the film itself, and we can talk about if you watched The Last Dance a couple of years ago, the Netflix documentary series about Michael Jordan, and how familiar you were with the subject matter.
No, unfortunately, I started it. I really liked it, and I felt like I wasn't concentrating on it enough. So I thought I'd do it like again from the start, and then I never picked it up. So I need to, I need to do that one again. I wasn't very familiar with the subject matter, and frankly, I mean, I'm not that much of a basketball watcher. So I'll probably say some things that are entirely, you know, wrong here during this episode. So just bear with me for that. Does this get touched upon in the series?
There's almost more than half an episode dedicated to this particular deal. So for those who did watch the series, and as one of them, I love the series. I like you, don't watch a lot of basketball. And I'm not very familiar with the NBA in general over the years. I know a lot of friends who have been, but watching that series and watching that particular episode or that part of the series, it's nice because it's a great companion piece. You're seeing the documentary, the nonfiction side of it from the perspective of Michael Jordan, because it's a Michael Jordan documentary, and his family, and where that deal came in terms of his career, because he was a fresher and it was a path-breaking deal for its time. It still is, I think. So we saw it from that perspective. What's nice is that we are seeing it now from the corporate perspective, which is which sort of completes the whole picture in my head, at least, because I was very fascinated by this particular part of his career.
Yeah, so the film, as you pointed out, it's from the side of Nike. It kind of takes their viewpoint, and we don't really see Michael Jordan at all. When he's there, we only see the back of his head. But his mother, Dolores, who's played by Viola Davis, is a important character in the film, because Matt Damon's character, whose name is Sonny Vaccaro, who's a talent scout for Nike, he figures that he needs to impress the mother, because he's advised that by his friend, who's also with Mikey, played by Chris Tucker. And so he charms the mother, but who is a very... who's not an easy person to impress. So those scenes are really great. The ones between Damon and Viola Davis, and as you pointed out, in 1984, Nike wasn't in great shape. It was fine as far as a couple of other sports and just being a jogging shoe, but in basketball, it was a very, very distant third to Adidas and Converse at that time. So the idea that they could get Michael Jordan, who was very far-fetched, because not only was, you know, I mean, Sonny realizes that he might be a once-in-a-generation player, but it's not like his talent was a secret. So everyone wanted him. And Michael Jordan himself wanted, to sign with Adidas. So the chances of Nike getting him are very, very slender. And it's through the film, we just see how Sonny keeps pushing. He's like this sort of morose robot who hasn't slept very well and who just keeps on at it. It's a very interesting role to see Matt Damon in, and at quite a few times he reminded me of Philip Seymour Hoffman, just in that kind of disaffected manner that he has. Yeah, and then finally we see him get into a room with Michael's family, and then he has to make a pitch. So that's basically the film, and it's kind of a series of conversations, which is strange. Strange because if you've seen Ben Affleck's filmography before this, it's quite different. It's not really like any of the films that he's done before this. I was quite surprised this film coming from these guys.
I sort of found it very interesting that it's more or less a film about a cracking of a deal, which can't have been exciting in real life no matter how much they dramatize it. And I like the kind of films that sort of play it up in that sense, and you're right about it being different from Ben Affleck's previous films. Most of them suspense and action oriented, or even very physical films in a way. It's a nice little pleasant change of track for him as well. And I like that you mentioned Matt Damon, Sonny Vaccaro reminds you of Philip Seymour Hoffman, because that's the first thing that came to my mind. His character in Moneyball, especially, basically.
Very much so.
I'm guessing that might have been the brief almost, because I saw a lot of Moneyball in this film, or it being used as a template. I mean, I'd call this a sports drama, because the same way Moneyball was a sports drama, except we are seeing the backroom dealings, and which is very much a part of the sport, and we don't have to watch the sport for that, or the character, in this case, Michael Jordan, for that. So, of course, in that case, it's my favorite kind of sports drama where you are expected to know a little bit of context about where this stands or what sport it's representing or how exciting it could be for the future. You're expected to sort of have that luxury of hindsight, so that we know that, of course, the deal was cracked. Of course, it was a game changer in more ways than one. It changed America in many ways as far as sports and culture is concerned. It was very Moneyballish in that sense. And I remember I wanted to almost start the review with saying exactly that, because in Moneyball, Brad Pitt's character is sort of someone who's disillusioned with the scouting system and with the baseball scouting, talent scouting system. So he comes up with this sabermetric method along with the economics graduate he picks up from another sort of baseball outfit. And here you're seeing a talent scout who's putting his all behind that. So that entire sort of old schoolness about Matt Damon's character, Sonny Vaccaro, sort of worked very well in tandem. Moneyball is one of my favorite films, or probably my favorite sports film ever. So I guess I think it was already starting from a point of victory for me. And the fact that he played it like Philip Seymour Hoffman was great for his transformation, because Sonny Vaccaro starts as the cynical guy who's been in the business for so long. We've seen it. We saw it with Brad Pitt's character in Moneyball. When he starts the film, he is exactly, they have that boardroom, not the boardroom, but that meeting with the talent scouts, where he's just sort of trash talking them and saying, you guys don't know anything.
That exact scene reminded me so much of him bullying the other people in that meeting in Moneyball, when Brad Pitt is kind of he's just like dismissing their choices. And then Jonah Hill enters. Is a very similar scene.
And so it's the exact contrast here, right? He's dismissing his scouts who represent a certain kind of sport, which is basically more instinct than numbers. And here the scout is dismissing the executives, which is the opposite, which is great. Like I found it very fascinating that in 1984, or basketball in general, that you're having a character like this. So that's why the scene hit on so many levels. where he's just dismissing everyone in that room. He's tired. You know, he wants to almost quit. And, you know, Ben Affleck's character is playing the CEO of Nike, Phil Knight. You know, they have a personal equation. And I'm sure their off-screen friendship really informed that sort of equation on screen as well. It felt nice in a sense because it didn't feel like these corporate suits who were just talking to each other in a particular kind of terminology. It felt like Matt Damon's character was on the verge of giving up. And then he sees this video in tandem with an Arthur Ashe advert, which I found. So let's talk about that scene for a bit. Because, first of all, it's a very technical scene. He sees Michael Jordan's sort of very famous shot in college football that basically got him noticed all across America, which was a sort of buzzer-beating last basket sort of thing. I don't know much about basketball. I'm trying to be as non-ignorant as possible here. But he did make that shot. And this was the shot that made him sort of one of the most popular you know, figures in terms of the NBA outfits and them wanting him. So he sees that video, and it's very technical, of course, because he explains that to Jason Bateman's character, who's Rob Stasso, who's the marketing VP, I think. And we don't know basketball, so I didn't really get that, what exactly the greatness that he saw in that scene. But it's a feeling, right? We've seen this scene in so many sports films. And yeah. Matt Damon suddenly waking up from his slumber and going from cynical to very hopeful on basis of that scene alone. Did that scene work for you?
I think if I'd had a little more context, like if I was more familiar with basketball and with Jordan's career, I think it would have worked a little better. But I got the idea. Because, you know, you've seen that scene in so many sports films, not just Moneyball, but lesser films than that also, where that, you know, someone sees that one moment of, you know, an athlete, and that's enough for them to kind of bet the house on them, which is what immediately happens out here. And yeah, and then after that, it's just like all, like he puts all his chips. So what Nike was going to do is they're going to bet it. They were trying to go and sign like three rookies in their entire budget. What Sonny proposes is that they put all their money on Jordan, which is sounds like an incredible idea, though with hindsight, not so much. And I'm actually jealous of your review because you made the Mark Mascarenhas, Sachin Tendulkar deal comparison with this, which is exactly what it is. And I don't know what to blame for my not mentioning that in my review. That will haunt me, I guess. You were talking about Damon and Affleck's scenes together in this, and we'll talk about the rest of the acting because it's just such a pleasure watching this cast, really. I think it's just the rewatchable quality of this film is going to be off the charts, I think, because it's just a beautiful cast, really taking pleasure in like conversations and just like talking to each other, trash talking each other, shooting down each other's ideas. And the scenes are just, it's really is about the journey rather than, you know, how the deal is cracked in the end. But specifically for Damon and Affleck, I thought the fact that, you know, they have this long association and that they, you know, that we know their friends and everything, it helps so much because Phil and Sonny are pretty much fighting for the first three, four scenes that they have together. Like Phil just cannot see what Sonny, why he would be betting the whole house on a rookie. And so what we bring to it as viewers is our knowledge of their friendship, and it kind of, I think, informs those scenes that, you know, that it helps us to know that even though these guys are kind of trashing each other and they seem to be kind of hating each other, There is actually some respect there, and there's a history there, and these guys actually know how the other person works, and they're just trying to see, you know, why the other person is thinking the way they are.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it isn't your usual CEO versus employee equation. It mentioned a couple of times that Phil himself took a chance by hiring Sonny, and he's right. The one who probably hired him to resuscitate like a sinking division. And he keeps wanting this magic that he thinks Sonny has, and so far probably hasn't shown, because Sonny is a bit too much of a pragmatist in that sense. He's very stubborn about his about what he knows about basketball, and the romantic in him wakes up after watching Jordan. And I think Phil wasn't prepared for that, at least to go to an extent where he like sign one player instead of three, because it's, as we know, Nike was already a $1 billion corporation by then. So it was doing very well in terms of apparel and in terms of their jogging shoes. So this division was more or less dispensable almost by the time this film opens. And I guess Phil taking so much, Phil getting so emotionally invested in this division, I found to be quite moving. Especially the way Ben Affleck plays him, and the way as you said, the chemistry he shares with Sonny, because sure, they're trash talking each other, and sure, Phil is saying a couple of hurtful things, saying, you know, I don't know why I hired you, but you know, it's all water under the bridge, in the sense that Sonny knows exactly that this is why he was brought in there. And funnily enough, I was reminded of their equation in Good Will Hunting, which is the film they both won Oscars for screenplay writers. Probably as 5-year-olds, that young they were. But I think their equation there was where Ben Affleck's character believes in Matt Damon's character blindly. Yeah. And he's the only one who tells him that you're meant for great things. And need to get out of this Bostonian company, our small town, small ambition company, because you're meant for greatness. And there it was Damon resisting it and trying to be one of the guys. And here it's basically Damon turning around and said, this is why you hired me, and you're the only one who believes in me, so let's make it happen. So, of course, the history of their on-screen and off-screen relationship really helps the film. I think that was the core of the first few scenes that you mentioned. And I think it could have gone terribly wrong also, because it was nothing great in a sense. You knew that you're watching more or less a lot of bickering happening in a big company. And it's difficult to get invested in it if it was anyone else. And the fact that because of that, they made Nike feel like an underdog, which is not an easy thing to do, given what we know of Nike today.
Yeah, I think we should come to that at some point. Just the idea of, like, you know, because I see some people saying that, you know, why should we root for a corporation, for a brand, you know, that kind of thing, which I don't agree with. But just before that, I found this film kind of suspended between in a good way, but suspended between an Adam McKay film and an Aaron Sorkin written film. Basically, the way it starts off with, you know, with the montage, with the, you know, ads, sports kind of montage in the beginning, and the sort of these almost playing out like an advert itself in the initial parts is very much Adam McKay. But it doesn't, you kind of realize that the characters are very Sorkin-ish. And in this film is written by a writer named Alan Convery. I'm not familiar with anything else. Alex Convery. And I'm not familiar with anything else he's written. It definitely, there is a Sorkin influence on it that goes beyond Moneyball also. A lot of the character types, I would say, are very much him. There's the kind of David, who's the agent played by Chris Messina. Really funny exchanges with Sonny that he has mostly on the phone. I think there are, you know, that's a very Sorkin-ish kind of character. And even the boss in Newsroom, Charlie Skinner, He's kind of this sort of slightly comic boss, but in the end he comes through when times are tough, and that is very much the characterization of Phil out here. I don't know if you noticed actually right at the end when they've signed Jordan, when they've got the meeting with Jordan, and by that time Phil is getting hyped up, and he's like, he's on board, and he's saying he'll come and talk to them, and he's talking to Sonny, and then they're kind of going their separate ways, and as Phil turns around, he kind of he walks away, and he just claps his hands together in like a sort of in happiness. And that's the exact same gesture that Ben Bradley makes in All the President's Men after they've nailed the story. And it's very obviously a tribute to that. Yeah. And so it's just, this might look like a fairly, simple, frivolous film on its surface, you know, a bunch of very famous actors picking up the story of a shoe and just, you know, making a film where people just sit around talking. But it's not like they don't have these kind of films in mind. They have All the President's Men in mind. I think they have Moneyball, definitely they have in mind. And a lot of these great office dramas, I think, do inform Air, even though Air is a comedy.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because I think one of the things even I ended up writing the review was that it's very much like a journalism movie in that sense, right? It's all about sort of cracking the deal and basically breaking the story in a way. And it's all backroom dealings, and it is and there has to be some kind of suspense and excitement. And it's great that you mentioned All the President's Men and the gesture, because it makes sense now, because you can see Ben Affleck's using that template, the journalism template. And we know the American journalism movie is a particular kind of template. It is really, it's feel good, it's rousing. You know that they have a certain way of going out. You've seen parody videos of it on YouTube, the newspaper movie, basically. I found it quite nice that they sort of, sure, Moneyball and the other sports dramas are there, but they use that very specific template. So that gesture was spot on about Ben Affleck. And another thing is also that, great that you mentioned Adam McKay, because yesterday, out of nowhere, I started watching Big Short for the 10th time. And it's just the most rewatchable movie ever. And when I'm doing nothing, I just put it on. And I know nothing about what they are talking about. And the film knows that. And that's why it's so audacious. It does that whole cheeky cameo bit with where it gets all famous people to explain impossibly technical financial terms. I love Big Short a lot. And even though I totally don't understand what it's going on about, but I get the gist of the Adam McKay brand of filmmaking. And that's the thing I was thinking yesterday. And that there are certain... So movies like this, or movies based on true stories or historicals in a way, there can be two kinds, right? Like there's the Adam McKay and there's the Air sort of brand, where you make fairly boring things look exciting on screen, which is a big challenge, or at least look interesting as heck, which is a big challenge. Sometimes you can get carried away and go overboard with it. Especially when it's about finance, or when it's about like a corporate basically trying to crack a deal, these things can't have been exciting to watch or to go through. So there's that kind of film which makes a procedural sort of become very exciting. And then there's another kind of film that makes very exciting events look boring, or like tone it down to a degree where you almost forget that they are actually trying to convey something that's very intense in history. A lot of war films fall in that category, I guess. And I'd also say, I think another example which both you and me watched a couple of years ago was the Gucci film, I think, with with Lady Gaga and what's his name?
Adam Driver.
So yeah, that's another kind of biopic where, you know, you see sort of a very flashy approach towards it. And I like that about, I've always liked that about people like Adam McKay and Aaron Sorkin as a writer also. Their ability to sex up this kind of film or this kind of, and they're being very blatant about it. Look at Big Short now, it's more of a comedy than a drama, but it's also a massive tragedy. And I'd watch it again and again if I have to watch companion pieces. I'd watch that and Margin Call back to back for the rest of my life. I have no qualms doing it, though I don't understand anything of what happens in those two films. I'd say the same thing about Air and Moneyball, you know, companion pieces in every sense. And even though we don't get the nitty-gritties of, you know, what exactly they are doing and the technicalities of basketball and baseball, it's just so much fun watching. And I root for this kind of film. And I root for, I don't care if it's, you know, if it's a corporate or if it's a big person or someone that history has basically, someone who's made history and we are watching it like 30 years later. It's just a big swing and it's a big talent to make films like this look so engaging and interesting.
Also, it's like, I feel like what, I felt it was different from Adam McKay in the sense that Adam McKay always seems to be kind of hyping up his material, you know, kind of sexing everything up. Like every scene is kind of the most, you know, the maximum scene it can be is what he seems to be going for in every way. Like whatever can push it, whether it's score or performance or just some detail that he's doing, it has to be like everything has to be up there at 11. Air is a much more easygoing film than that. It feels like there's more room to breathe and kind of watch Matt Damon give this sort of really grumpy great performance and all these other players just come in and have great fun It's not, and you'd expect Ben Affleck, given his, you know, given the success that he had with Argo, to, you know, maybe since he's again teaming up with Damon, maybe he'll try and, you know, make a film that's going to be like, you know, go for awards and stuff like that. And it's not that kind of film at all. Yeah. It's the kind of film that you enjoy watching again and again and again. At least I would. I don't know if it would work for, you know, a lot of people, but it's certainly my kind of rewatchable film. And it doesn't seem to kind of, it's not Ben Affleck, you know, making a director's film per se. I think it is more of a writer's film and a performer's film more than a director's, and I think that's new from Ben Affleck, and I was a bit surprised. But you do feel like it's still like humans and human voices in this, and it's a more life-size film, even though it's about a corporation, and I think that's what kind of saves the film. It's kind of telling that the person who's the most eloquent in the film with the most command over what he's saying is the guy who is actually designing the shoe. This guy called Pete, and played by this great actor called Matthew Meher, and who's also in this great pirate comedy called Our Flag Means Death. In case anybody wants to check that out, it's fantastic sort of underseen pirate comedy. And he's, you know, he has these beautiful lines. I think it says at one point that the shoe has the logic of water, and he just comes up with these things, and he's the most eloquent person in the whole film. And I think, you know, without trying to underline it too much, what Affleck is saying is that, you know, there can be soul in anything. In an athlete, in a talent scout, in the head of a huge corporation, in a shoe designer, and in a Hollywood director. And it just depends on you know, whether they care about it. Whereas, you know, any of your recent tentpole films, they feel soulless compared to something like this, because, you know, you feel like you can see the notes coming from the executives to the director.
Yeah.
And that's not the case out here. It feels handmade, even though it is this sort of film that is about a product and about a brand.
I definitely prefer this kind of film where you know it's about a brand, you know it's probably more or less a very eloquent or very fun advert for the brand, but at the same time, they do such a good job of humanizing the entire corporate atmosphere. It doesn't really feel like that corporate stereotype that we've been watching over the years, and they often are the villains in films, in sports films or in biopics. And the fact that we go into their heart and soul and see how they pulled a rabbit out of the hat with something like this, you know, I'm all for it. And as you said, and as you very rightfully mentioned in your tweet, well, I think sharing your review, you know, that the tentpoles and the system behind it is far worse than, you know, something like this, where you're actually seeing a story of a corporate. And there's an irony in that, that people might find it necessary to criticize this while consuming that on sort of a daily basis and turning them into billion-dollar industries. So what I'd like to see maybe 10 or 20 years later is the guy or is the person who maybe came up with this entire MCU Marvel thing. You know, it's that equivalent of, it's the equivalent of making a biopic of someone who triggered this Marvel and DC revolution. And you're seeing basically this, and you're seeing more or less the equivalent here. How sort of Nike pulled it off 30 years ago or 40 years ago. And, you know, I'd be up for seeing stories about, it doesn't matter, corporates or corporate or companies or villains for that matter. But if you have someone like Ben Affleck sort of steering the wheel, and if you have the kind of cast that is in it, and Jason Bateman consistently does these kind of roles and he's very good at them, and he has a nice monologue here.
Oh, with, that one scene, right?
Yeah, I know. And lovely words, right? And even there, you don't, a shoe is a shoe until sort of someone steps into it. And it's beautifully sort of personalized by Viola Davis's character in the end. So it's a shoe until my son steps in it. So it all really comes up. It's not like, as you said, you know, it's not entirely Adam McKay-ish in that sense. And there's a lot of soul in what it's trying to say. It's not cynical. It's not nihilistic. There's a lot of heart in the story. And I guess sometimes we just like to see that kind of thing. And I'm glad you mentioned the Peter Moore character, who's basically the shoe artist here, who's the shoemaker, Matthew Maher. Matthew Maher reminds me a lot of Tom Burke if he were older, if he balded a bit. And yeah. I almost had to see if it was Tom Burke for a bit, and then I recognized, okay, of course it's Matthew Maher. But yeah, it was a lovely character and one of many good characters, as you said. I think what really turned the film for me, when, even though I was a little wary about, you know, how they're going to approach it and how do we not look at it as Nike propaganda, and how we balance our emotions about the film with what it's about. I think what really turned it was, for me, the last 10 or 15 minutes, especially the fact that we are led down the path where Sonny Vaccaro is waiting for a phone call from Delores Jordan. And it basically, that scene, we've seen it 100 times in many kinds of films, many kinds of contexts. The phone call comes, he's the underdog, sure, she, you know, sort of agrees to it, but then she puts forward her side of things and her demand, so to say. And I like that it was a complete switch of, because you'd expect that phone call to be the feel-good climax of a film like this.
Yeah.
And there's a second ending, which is a phone call again, this time from sort of him to her, saying, you know, we agree to your outlandish demands, and it's path-breaking demands, which is they wanted a percentage of the shoes. So that second ending, where it basically makes the story from Nike go to the story about Jordan that we've not been seeing so far. We've only seen the back of his head. We've only seen his mother, who's probably in charge of things. as she should be, because he's an 18-year-old sort of basketball, flashy basketball kid. And it reminds us that this story was about Michael Jordan all along. It was about his people. It was about his community and what he might mean to them over the next 30 years, and what he still does mean to them. So the changing the direction of that phone call towards the end and changing the perspective, you could almost see the lens shift focus from Nike to Michael Jordan in that one quick masterstroke of writing, where he calls her and he congratulates her towards the end rather than him congratulating, rather than her congratulating him earlier. So I really liked that touch, and it reminded us that Jordan is just not another sort of player, or he's not just another sort of device for the narrative to hinge on and to make it about Nike. And it was basically Nike admitting that that they were the ones who changed the landscape more than just as much as, say, Sonny Vaccaro and Phil Knight.
Yeah, and no, that's an excellent point. And I think it's also kind of characteristic of this film that doesn't try and make the, you know, even though they are the protagonists of the film, it won't make Sonny and Phil and the rest of the people at Nike look cooler or more important than they are. In the end, the film is very cognizant that these are people who were lucky to catch on to a comet at that point in time. And they had the, you know, the wherewithal to kind of figure it out, that how they could, you know, change their fortunes by aligning with Michael Jordan's. And I liked through the film how uncool Sonny and Phil and Rob are. The only person who's wearing any nice suits in the film is Chris Tucker, who plays a marketing guy or something, an outreach guy at Nike. And the rest of them, that Matt Damon is just like in the most horrible shirts through the film. It's just the drabbest shirts possible. It's not even like trying to make a statement that he's a bad dresser. It's just that he is a boring dresser. It's quite something to put your star into those suits. And Ben Affleck wears like these crazy jogging ensembles, which are absolutely ridiculous. And these guys are not, you know, they're not cool. And they're kind of, Matt Damon's a bit unfit, and he's encouraged to take up jogging, but he can't even, like, he starts jogging at the end of the film, and he gives up immediately. And I don't think it's exactly the film that people would expect getting into it. It's not quite the smart aleck film that, you know, that people might be expecting. It has a little more heart, and it's certainly not like a, you know, like, look at all these cool guys. It's just like, look at these bunch of very determined dorks who managed to land Jordan.
Yeah, it's interesting because Chris Tucker's character, Howard White, was actually one of the two or three requests that Michael Jordan made that he be included in the film. Because I don't think he was in the original script. And I think it was one of his requests before okaying the film to go ahead. See, that's another thing, right? Like, you're basically consulting with the player himself to make the film. That's another red flag, so to say, or how we perceive red flags in filmmaking or biopics, right? When you start working with the person, you're obviously never going to see anything else but good things then in the film. It almost basically spells out propaganda after a while, and we are trained to look at these films with suspicion, the ones that take consult the person himself, or the ones that say is more or less produced by the company itself. So, but then that's another thing, it subverts very nicely, because it's not so much about Jordan or his life as it is about that moment that triggered the rest of his career, and the rest of America is history in general. Because that monologue that we should speak about also, Matt Damon's, where he basically, his pitch to them and him convincing them, where he just switches off the very corny ad in between and starts speaking and starts pitching to the family, and he goes on very lyrical monologue and him basically more or less telling Michael Jordan what he's going to go through in his career, and them stitching in sort of Jordan's rest of like the actual Michael Jordan's career and his tragedies and his triumphs and his father dying later. And basically that looked a lot like the Nike, a typical Nike advert, which they do so well. I love Nike adverts myself. I'm not complaining about this, but you could see that they were fashioning that monologue to be exactly like a Nike advert that's become so famous over the years. And by the end, my suspicions were sort of melted away. I like, even if they are going for a certain kind of film or for a certain kind of tone, I don't see it to be corrupt in any way. It's just good. It's just good, solid filmmaking. And as you said, a lot of heart in the way they go about it.
Yeah, a lot of fun, and also a nice way for, well, I saw it after I finished writing the Dahar review, and that was kind of a grueling 8 hours. So I think I needed something to unwind after that. And even though I knew I had to write about it, it was still, you know, it was just a nice de-stress after, you know, Dahar, which I think we're going to cover soon on this.
Yeah, we'll be speaking about that soon this week. And is there anything else about Air that interests you to talk about?
Not particularly, except Robert Richardson shot the film. It's nice if you can get Robert Richardson to shoot your not very ambitious visually film, but it still looks nice. And so that was always nice to see Richardson behind the camera. Anything else struck you?
Not really. I mean, excellent cast, good fun, and about Robert Richardson as well. I think that more or less encapsulates the essence of what the film is all going for, because you'd go in thinking it's going to be a really flashy, almost Aaron Sorkin-esque swish at this particular moment in history that probably changed sport forever. Because I think all the deals after that were of a different language altogether. And that's why athletes became stake owners in their own legacy. Because before that, I think it was only corporate sort of really feeding off them. So there was so much at stake, even though it never felt like it. And so, like, getting someone like Robert Richardson to shoot it, and getting someone like Matt Damon to sort of put on weight, look like Philip Seymour Hoffman in it, and Ben Affleck doing his geeky, nerdy stuff in this, it's always a nice little reminder of, you know, the relationship between how a film looks and what it's about. And given that most of it was shot indoors, there was not a lot of outdoor. It's entirely Nike is based in Oregon. So again, a very unconventional American place for, say, the largest headquarters of the largest company in the world to be. And I like the nice little pot shots at Adidas and Converse as well. And I'm quite surprised. I wonder if you have to take permission of those companies to tell them that they're going to trash them in this. Because in India, I'm just so used to there being outrage about the smallest of things and having to sort of weave around using actual names and using actual company names. I wonder how they went about it here.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, it's in India, in the movies now they can't even say Twitter and stuff. So it's just weird. Just a small shout out to Ben Affleck, absolutely murdering it in these kind of supporting performances that he's just there to have fun. And it was like that in The Last Duel, a film with Damon and Affleck, and written by them, film that I didn't think too highly of. But, oh man, is Ben Affleck fun in that film. If you can just try and someone has done like a compilation of Ben Affleck's best lines in The Last Duel. I think even that is worth checking out. He is so funny in that film, and he's really funny in this one too.
Yeah. I mean, great way to end that, because, and also a very welcome return to form for him as a filmmaker, because it's been a while since he's made like a solid out there film. And given how he started his career with like, you know, sort of target after target, like three films in a row. I'm glad that he's back to that kind of form and voice, and he's back to his best form as an actor, which is as a supporting actor. Because I wouldn't go for Ben Affleck as a lead actor of most films now. But I think he just has it to understand the essence of like playing a support performance in most of his films. And I really enjoy him, and I hope we continue to see him sort of direct, films like this and solid films, and his continuous career as a supporting actor, because God knows we haven't had enough of it in the last decade, at least since Argo and Town, and you know, when he was on a hot streak as such. So yeah, good to see him back. And that about wraps up this podcast about Air. We do recommend you watch the film. Have fun watching it. Write into us if you have any more observations to make. And if any of you are basketball nerds, it'd be even more fun to hear about this film. We'll be back soon. We'll be discussing The Heart soon this week. Till then, thank you for listening, and see you soon.